Kickstart a girth, if you will.
How much is too much?
How much girth?
How many inches is too many inches of game?
My initial title for the episode was is more or less more? But I think I wonder if how much
or is just enough, just enough.
Yeah, or is just enough too much? Or perhaps that the title could be is how much girth is too much?
1.5 calyxes. No, that's too much. Only up to 1 calyx.
Right, you'll just have to go with me on the intro part, right, by the way.
Okay. Oh, this is far off. Oh. What do you got for us, big boy? All
right. Welcome to the Board Game Gateway, where we take you on a wild ride through the exciting world of Gateway board games. Our hosts, Neva, Ralph, and Matt, are here to guide you through the ins and outs of the latest and greatest games that will have you and your friends laughing, strategizing, and begging for more. As we explore the Gateway board game universe, we'll share tips and tricks to help you master the games, interviews with industry insiders, apparently, and hilarious anecdotes from our own gaming experiences. So whether you're a seasoned board gamer, pro, or just starting out, tune into the Board Game Gateway and let us be your guide. And of course, we cannot forget our puntastic tagline, roll the dice, take a chance, and let us be your gateway to all things board game.
All right, so Nate, that wasn't bad for your fifth take, but...
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, what episode number are we?
We're episode 27.
It took you 27 episodes to write that?
I thought it was pretty great. I thought it was great.
To be fair, it took ChatGPT 27 episodes to write that. Yes, that's right. That was I typed into ChatGPT. I'm like, I wonder if I can get to type my intro just to see what it comes up with.
I think he's going to replace us next week.
Oh, God. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Board Game Gateway. My name is Nebra, if you haven't already figured it out. And this is a weekly podcast, episode number 27, about board games and the fun times that we have.
They know. They heard your 4-minute introduction.
But what if it was their first time and they don't know that we're idiots?
Don't worry. They'll soon get that as well.
They've already cottoned on. My name's Nebra, as I said. Sitting in front of me is Mr. Matt.
Hello.
And sitting to my left is Mr. Ralph.
Hi, everyone.
I can't believe I said hello. I stole Blake's thing again.
It's getting old. He needs a new thing now.
That's right. Hello has gotten old.
That's right. We are Blakeless. That's right. Blakeless. Once again, tonight, you and Blake are feuding something fierce, apparently.
I don't know what it was.
You guys just refuse to be in the same room together.
We just can't get our stars aligned at all. And it's not... I really don't know. Actually, I said to Jay today, it's like, Blake is avoiding me. I'm avoiding Blake. I don't know why we're doing this. It just hurts my soul. Especially after that beautiful poem that he wrote.
He did. He had a great ode to you.
He sends flowers every couple of days. It's very sweet. Send some flowers, Blake.
Oh, God. If this is the first time tuning in to the Board Game Gateway podcast, we are going to have a bit of a chat about some of the games that we've played this week. We're going to be talking about our Gateway Game of the Week, which this week we're taking it right back to the Settlers of Catan. And then we're going to have a chat about our discussion topic for the week. And this week we're going to be having a talk about the completionist, is what we're calling it, or how much is too much. You know, we'll get to that at the end.
Bloatware,
as it were. We'll talk about all things Kickstarter, all things expansion, all things extra, and we will have a bit of a chat about that. But it's great to see you guys. Great to have you back. I feel like this week I feel like I've been a bit, I don't know, all over the shop. I haven't really got many games to the table. I've actually played quite a few BGA games, but nice. Actually with you and Ralph and our friend Damien, we just finished a game of Six Nimmet.
Mm. But that was a great one.
It was so good. We were playing that. It was actually really funny. So Six Nimmet's a card game, playing cards into a line and trying not to get points, kind of like golf style. But the game itself, we were playing... I don't know, asynchronously, whatever the...
Yeah, so it's turn-based. So we basically played it, you know, in between toilet breaks at work and things like that.
Well, the funny thing is all three of us are IT guys.
Yeah.
So like, and because BGA sends you email notifications, we'd all just be at work and just get a ping And so, like, one of us would, like, take a double move, and then the other two would be, like, in within 5 minutes and do a move, and then we just bugger out and just see what was
going on. Yeah, that worked great, especially for a game like Six Nymphs.
Yeah, it was really good. Perfect. Yeah, it took us about a week and a half to get through the entirety of the game, I think, and it literally came down to 5 points. No, I was on negative... Yeah, 5 points. I was, like, on negative 5, and you were on 1 point, I think.
I won on a 0 points. I literally, you on zero? I got to 0 points, and Damien got -1, and I think you were -5 or something like that, and... I've never seen a game that close, to be honest.
Yeah, the game ends when someone goes under zero. So the first person to go under zero, then whoever's got the most amount of points is the winner. And literally, Ralph won on
the least amount of points? Or
the most amount of points, sorry.
Yeah, the most. So you lose points during the game. So you want to start at 66 and you lose points as you play the game. Mm. So it's fun for
everyone.
So
to end up on one is pretty good.
Maybe it was on zero.
Well, oh, on zero.
I was on zero, that's which even better. Never happened. Because as soon as someone drops below zero, that's the end of the game, pretty much.
I've won on like 22. Points before, like you can actually have a lot of points left, and some people can just absolutely tank it really hard if you're not careful. We actually probably, we will talk about it more in a later podcast because it's going to be one of our gateway games, I think.
Cool. Yeah, it's coming up in the short.
But what about you, Matt? It's been a while, a hot minute since we've had you on the podcast. You're been away at rehearsals, working the old
life's getting a bit busy. Mm. And I haven't actually had much time to do much in the world of gaming at all. So, but if you're playing turn-based stuff at work, I also work on a computer, so the invitation to me would be very much appreciated the next week.
Definitely. All right, we'll open that up.
Contribute to the podcast.
We'll open that up for sure.
Fantastic. Well, if you are keen to come and play some games with us on Board Game Arena, search for the Board Game Gateway on BGA. We do have a group, a guild on BGA, so, you know, we... don't have many. I think we only have like 5 or 6 of us in there at the moment, which is the core group of guys that we play with. But we are thinking about trying to do a patchwork tournament in the near future. So
I've actually been playing a lot of space-based turn-based as well, which is fantastic on there. So we should open that up.
The implementation of space-based on BGA is really good because it allows you to just automate a lot of the things. Like, just take, if it lands on this number, just take it all. Or if it lands on this, save the cube.
Also, rule clarifications are really good as well.
Although, I will say in the last couple of weeks, there has been one big game that I've played, and we played TI at my house a couple of weekends ago. So,
how'd you forget about that?
It was at my house. The games don't usually happen at my house, I suppose.
Did we talk about it in the last couple of weeks? No, we haven't talked about it, no.
So, it was a 6-player game, and we got it out in... 7 hours?
Yeah, the game was over in 7 hours. 4:30,
I think. Just before 5 o'clock we
finished. Yeah.
So it was the quickest game we've had of TI, which was good.
And it was a stomping.
It was, yeah. There was
what do you mean it was a stomping?
Oh, there's a couple of big battles and...
No. Our friend George, he's now the new Galactic Emperor. He won the game. He, at the end of round number 2, and to give you an idea, this game normally... What? So at the end of round 2, no, he didn't.
Wow.
No.
Round 2, that's when someone just takes Mechatol.
It ended in round 5. Okay, so this
game. Alright, that's normal.
So to give you an idea, this game at 10 points will normally end in either round 6. Normally round 5. George, at the end of round 2, was on 5 points. Nearest person was on 2. And then at the end of round 3, he was on 7, and the nearest person was on 3.
That's insane. Like, how didn't the rest of the players gang up on
him? We did. But the thing was, we also played a variation map where we played the variation map we played with you, which is where all the planets start in the second ring, not in the third ring at the back.
Yep.
And what that ended up meaning was that at one point, no one could get to him because he had a supernova on his left and he had something on his right, and he ended up having 2 supernova war signs on the board, and no one could get into his home base.
Oh wow! Okay.
It was real.
He was gifted the public objectives went in his favor, and the private objective. He kept claiming private objectives like no one's business, and they all worked for
him. The reason why he got 5 crazy. Victory points as well was there was an agenda that came out that said this person is now not allowed to use action cards, but they get a victory point. And he had a lot of action cards, so people voted for him, and he ended up. That's how he got to 5 VP. And then every turn, he was able to score a secret objective and the public objective coming up. And then I think he got a card that said, you may have 1 extra secret objective. So I think he had 4.
Mm.
There's a thing where it's like one of the agendas or something allows, like, oh no, it was like an agenda or something came up where it's like everyone can have an extra secret objective or something like that.
Yeah.
So he just... It was it was
probably interesting. Well.
This game was over in round two. We were like, "This is his game to lose." He's like, "Nah," and we're like, "No, no, it's now your game to lose."
Because that's really interesting. Because you can start slowly eating up the planet, so his influence isn't great. But you could also like pay one other player that's his neighbor to build a big fleet and go for him. Like, and it's so like hard to like. And do also, you trust that person to do that or not?
So
like,
he had Necro on one side of him,
which was Tom
was playing Necro.
And you on the other.
Yeah.
And what did you do in that game, Matt?
I was pretty weak all around.
Please tell Ralph, what did you do?
Just didn't let him. No. I didn't stop him at all.
What did you do?
Look, what I did was fine, all right? I did nothing wrong. I was very afraid of the giant beside me.
He took out and he took my home base.
Yeah, that's fair.
I didn't take things home. Not the guy who was winning 5-2.
All right.
He took my home base in round three.
That's crazy.
So I launched an offensive on George.
Yeah, and he ate you up
and
from
he
behind.
Had, he, yes, I launched an offensive.
Hang on, back.
Okay, sorry.
George and I were sharing this wonderful system, right?
A three-planet system.
We had a great agreement. We were both getting something
George
out of it that we wanted.
George had his flagship in that system, and Matt only had control of one of the three planets in that system. He only had a PDS, and I was going in there to do two things. So I was playing the Mahak Gene Stealers. I was literally going in there to kill George and to drop a planet on one of the other ones that was free. So one of the planets hadn't been taken yet.
Oh, okay.
So one of your private objectives was to kill a flagship, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
To kill the flagship. And so, but I also went, George is so far
So you were getting
ahead.
Something out of this? It wasn't as if this was this you know, lovely, peaceful mission.
Of course I was. But George was so far ahead that I'm like, he's the one I've got to attack. Mm. So I launched an offensive on George going, let's take out his flagship. I'll score a VP. And Matt went, why are you in my territory? And I went, I'm killing the flagship. No, well, he's not doing anything bad. And so then he... Excuse me.
That's not what I said. I said, I'm also there. You're attacking my system as well.
No, I said
and
I'm
it was
attacking...
next to my home system.
So if anything, he aggravated this war, didn't he?
And I've said to him,
if anything,
I said, all you need to do was say,
Matt is a
this is my plan, right? If you had just told me what you were doing, I would have taken a
That's
shot
true.
At you.
It's all about communication. Right?
But he didn't. He just marches in.
The problem is he also...
Oh, well, I just want his... Well, come on.
He had PDS too by this point. So it wasn't just the PDS in that system. It was the PDS in the adjacent system, and he shot three shots and two of them hit.
As they said, by the end of round two, the writing was on the wall. So it was just, let's just have some fun with this, I suppose.
Yeah, that sounds good. That's a good way to look at it as well.
Yes.
Wow.
Fun. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, it's very rare you see a player run away that far in the lead in the game. Usually
ridiculous.
The rest of the table gang is up on them really quickly.
And admittedly, I said this to my brother Tom, I played the game very weakly because right off the bat, George had said to me, like one of the open objectives was own, I think it was four red resource planets or something, right?
Yeah.
And I had one in my local vicinity and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
He had two in his plus one of mine.
Yep.
I think there must have been something. Maybe he had three very close to
him. So
he
only
had the
very
one
lucky
extra one,
early
right?
on.
And I was
and
the foolishness of me was that I just gave that away instead of just trying to defend it or trading it for something a bit more valuable.
Mm.
But I looked at it and went, well, I can't get
generally,
that victory point.
You
so want to
trade
well.
You want to trade a point for a point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a fun day. It was one of the first time that we've played a game on Matt's big table on the inside.
Yeah, I know, because I actually messaged him about that. Like, you guys sent me a photo.
It is the insert of his table is as wide as this current table.
Because I think you guys sent me a photo, and I messaged, oh, nice table. I didn't know you could use it for games. And then Matt goes, oh, blow it out your ass, Ralph.
Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Look, admittedly,
I quite enjoyed that message.
By that stage, I'm pretty sure the game was very, very much over as well. But
I wasn't part of the game, so
no,
it was funny.
But it has been almost a year and a half since we've had that table. That's the first time we've had the entire thing opened up to play a board game. We've opened it up to play a couple of little card games here and there.
Well, if you're looking at buying potentially Gloomhaven, like Jaws of the Lion for you and Jane, then potentially that being a good excuse because you could set that up on the table, then put the overlay over the top, and then you don't have to keep packing your deck.
Well, that's what I do with my Lego days, right?
Oh,
scatter Lego in the middle
Lego,
of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It also means you never lose a piece because it can't escape from the table.
Very clever.
That's good.
Very good.
Okay. Well, they've heard us babble on for quite a few minutes about our
our misgrievances with each other. We are going to now move on to our gateway game of the week. And this week, we're taking it right back to one of the granddaddies of the modern board gaming scene. Released in 1995, we are looking at The Settlers of Catan, or just Catan if you're looking at the modern day boxes. The one that we have here in front of me, this is one of my very first board games that I ever bought back 14 years ago. Basically, this game is one of the three, what we call the Golden Gateway games, the Golden Triangle, if you will, which is Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, and Ticket to Ride are the three. This game is a resource management trading game in which we are all playing four different, I guess you can say, competing villages. We are trying to get resources into our hand and spend those resources making our little townships bigger, building roads on Catan, and also then potentially trying to get some of these what are called development cards. Development cards are special powers that you can play, which can be anything from victory points to knights. The way the game works is really simple. You set up the game board, which is a big hexagon made out of little hexagons. You put down little numbers from 2 to 12 on the board game. There is 1, 2, 1, 12, and then 2 of each of the other numbers, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 5, 6, and up to number 11. And then on your turn, at the start of the game, we place some cities down on the board to kind of get our initial space. And then we take the resources accordingly, what we're next to. And then your turn is quite simply roll the dice. Whatever number comes up, you then have a look at who has got settlements next to those hexes with those numbers. So Matt, for example, would have maybe a settlement on clay or something like that. There are five different resources, if I'm correct.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Wheat, yeah. Clay,
sheep,
and wood. So if Matt had a settlement next to a wood, that was number four. And number four was rolled. Congratulations, Matt. You've now got some more resources in your hand. You can create multiple settlements throughout the game. The only thing is they can't be too close to each other. So that creates this really cool little game of like area control. And then on your turn, you literally roll the dice. You get the resources. You do some building. You do some trading. And then move to the next person. Have I missed anything realistically in the...
Yeah, it's a race to 10 points.
Yes.
I don't think you mentioned that. You just mentioned points. But yes. It's basically the first player to get to 10.
And we all start on 2 points. So settlements are worth 1 VP. You can upgrade them to cities, which are worth 2 VP. You can have a battle for the longest road in Catan, which is worth 2 victory points. You can... try and get three knights, which are in the development card stack. If you get the first one of three knights or have the most knights, you get 2 VP. So it's basically a race to see who can get 8 victory points first. Gentlemen, our
to
game
10
play-
victory points.
To, yeah, so, well, mm-hmm. sorry, you start on 2, then two yeah, can, who fair. Can get yeah. 8 VP.
Yep.
Our game took us about 45 minutes. What did we think on reflection of this play? I mean, I won... But what do we think about Catan in general? And yeah, Matt, what do you think of the play?
It's been a while since I've played it, and on reflection, I think I've got a better appreciation for why it is part of the Golden Gateway games. Like after talking to you guys for the last year about games and kind of developing that extra understanding of different mechanisms and different reasons that games work, I can see why this game sits at the top of the pyramid there, because it's fast to play. It can be slow, I suppose, if you've got an interesting group of people, but it's fast to play, it's quick to learn, it's not a game where you feel like a decision ruins your game. Like, it's not a game where you could choose the wrong thing straight off the bat, right? You can obviously make the wrong choice, but you're not hemmed in, right? And I can understand why this is a good entry game for a lot of people, because it is a thinker. You still have to do a bit of management. You still have to manage your cards. You still got to talk to people and communicate. Oop, there's a bit of table talk going on in the game. But it seems to be like it ticks all the boxes for how to get people into the actual boardway at the board game community.
The Broadway community. Catan! You rolled a 7.
It's the rubber. Stop. There's money here, all right? Patent pending. Catan the musical. It's coming.
The Settlers of Catan on Broadway.
We are the Settlers of Catan.
And then there could
Catan.
Be other musicals, which will be the expansion pack. Yes. All right, okay. Stop the podcast. We've got to write this right now.
Wood for sheep. Wood.
I think no. The rest of the podcast is us soundboarding this with our audience.
God, we're gonna lose everyone. Our audience dropped away straight away when we started singing. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. It's fast paced. And as I said, it just sits there in the sweet spot for a simple to learn game for all ages. Now, I've been playing this as well with my kids, the junior version. So, and it's been interesting the similarities between the two games, and I can see the stepping stone as well. Like, as I said, it's been a while since I played the big version.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference that the little version has over the big version? Like you mentioned, the rubber works differently, which I don't think we've explained how the rubber works.
Yeah, the rubber works quite simply. I mentioned there's numbers on the board, but there's no number 7 on the board. Because what happens is if you roll the number 7, then there's a piece called the rubber. And the rubber, you can move around the game board, and you can then sit him on a hexagon, and if that number comes up, then it doesn't score any resources. You also get the chance to steal a resource from another player. So that's really the only kind of high interaction. I mean, like, negative interaction you can have with another player in this game. You can say, oh, would you like wood for sheep? And they go, no. But that's not really, I wouldn't say it's a negative interaction when trading, but this is a direct, I'm going to steal a card from your hand. You don't just have to deal with it.
So that mechanism in the junior version is set up with islands and pirates instead of one big landmass and different areas. The individual islands have still got their resources. The robber is like the Dread Pirate Robertson, right? He's the ghost pirate, essentially. So wherever he lands, kills that area, but also the surrounding hexagons around him don't work at the same time. That mechanism, I suppose, kind of leans into the bigger version, because in the junior version, there's no stealing off another player.
Right.
So whilst you can move the pirate to someone else's,
location,
it doesn't grant you anything personally, right? It's just to stop that from the next round. So it's not as adversarial, I suppose. There is no trading either. You can trade with the market, but you can't trade with other players.
So no one's saying no to you.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all a one-to-one trade as well. So
very forgiving. It's good.
Yeah, that's right. Really forgiving game. But it teaches those basics.
Perfect.
And as we were going through, and you've got your 2-to-1, 3-to-1 type of trades on this game with your resources, or even just the trade across the table where it is open slather. Like, I can see where Junior lands, at that first stepping stone for, my kids are 8. They love it. But I could see, 10 plus on the box? Yeah. So in a couple of years' time, those techniques that they're learning would suddenly take off into this game. So yeah,
definitely will.
What do you think, Ralph? Coming back and playing this game after quite a while?
Yeah, I last played it a few weeks ago by coincidence. But I like how the developer, Klaus, he just made it because he wanted to play a game with his two kids, his two sons.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be confrontational. Like, Monopoly is very, you're going to lose very early on. It's luck of the dice. And this is still luck of the dice, but it has that interaction, which is what the developer was going for. Again, with high interaction, most of which were positives. So it's great to play with young kids as well. This game is quite huge in the competitive side of board gaming.
Yeah, there's massive tournaments worldwide for this game, which is really interesting to see.
And I actually couldn't sleep about a month ago, and just on my YouTube is all board games, let's just submit that now. The competitive, in Vegas, the grand final was on my YouTube feed. I was like, you know what, it's 3 a.m. I'm just gonna watch this thing. It didn't put me to sleep. No, it was thrilling.
It's actually really interesting looking at a competitive side to this game, because a lot of the guys, there is metagames that form, which is they know different distributions and things will the minimum is going to be 2-for-1 here if you want that. Or
that's right. They know the ratio of the trade
game. What they need to do. And that's one big thing about this game, which is, I mentioned at the beginning of the game, you put down your initial settlements and you get to put down 2 of them. And that is a huge part of the game because there are limited spaces on the board And obviously, sixes and eights roll better or have a higher probability of rolling than any other numbers. And so if you don't get into these good spaces, you're really banking on some higher probability strats or lower probability strats, I should say, that in the long run may not come out.
But can pay off really well.
You had a couple of like times where the five would come out quite a few times, which is lower probability, but actually paid out really well. I mean, I end up winning our game because I was really the only one who had a handle on wheat. And I was very lucky that the dock that I had in my side of the board was allowing me to trade wheat for 2-1. So I use that to my advantage. I forego the biggest road or anything and actually a presence on the other side of the board to go put three settlements around this one wheat tile, and by the end of the game it actually started paying off. I'd get three wheat every time, potentially getting other wheat from other places, and then I was also, you know, able to trade it quite well. I will say this is my least favorite of the Golden Gateway games. In fact, I wouldn't even rate it in my top 10 Gateway games. After having played other games now, I do feel like it does have a couple of downfalls.
There's not a lot of agency in it.
Yeah, it suffers from that monopoly thing of roll dice, and now I'm at the suffrage of what it comes up. There was actually a few times in that game. So our game took 45 minutes, right? The last time I played Catan, it took me 2 hours. I cannot stress how much that sucked. This game needs to be played in under an hour. However, in saying that, this game, there were, even in our 45 minutes, there was a good, five or six turns when some of us would just roll the dice and go, can't do anything, pass it on.
Yeah, that happened a lot.
No resources came out, the rolls weren't there, we didn't have settlements. And so it was just like, well, I guess that's my turn done, pass it on. And that's where this game suffers. Now, we aren't playing, this is just base Catan. We're not talking about with the expansion with the Seafarers, which apparently a lot of people say, like, you shouldn't be playing without Seafarers. However,
well, we did.
We did. No, but
sorry if that triggers anyone.
No, but we are also taking this from the standpoint of, if I am a person getting into the board gaming scene, I'm not going to go, ooh, Settlers of Catan, and then go, ooh, I need the Seafarers expansion, like, because it's a good game. It's like, no, this is what most people will get out of the box, and from an out of the box experience. I mean, don't get me wrong, it is so much better than games like Monopoly Panic, because there is like interaction. I can trade with you. It plays very, very quickly. No one's eliminated, so you're always playing. But it can get... It's almost too simple for the amount of decisions that you have to make, which is the decisions you make are, I've got the resources in my hand. Can I trade with anyone? No, I can't trade with anyone. Or yes, I can. I'll do that trade. Now, what resources do I have? What do I think are the best buildings? Build said building, and then I'm hoping, like, again, but you're playing probabilities here. You're hoping that the numbers...
I don't disagree with you in that it's not... Like, you wouldn't get this out, or we wouldn't get this out on the regular.
No.
Because it doesn't provide enough for people of our skill level and our experience with board games, right? In that you'd go, yeah, got to get that out, because that was a lot of fun. It was enjoyable. It was fun to play with people of the same... You know, of the same caliber, so that way the game does flow, and you're not.
Yeah, it felt competitive still.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't bored in it. But you're right. It wouldn't be something that I immediately reach for. But that's from our standpoint, right? From the entry level standpoint, I think it's fantastic.
Definitely.
Like, I can see, as I said, exactly why it sits where it sits in the market.
It's a real simple game to learn as well. It's not...
It provides enough to get people hooked into board games in general, I think.
Yeah, look, and I don't disagree with that either. I mean, this is one of those games that I bought for that specific reason. I thought, everyone says this is a really good game. I will say, though, that if you're anything like me, you don't need to be a heavy gamer to get over this game very quickly. And I think, for me, it took about maybe 4 or 5 games of it before I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I think I'm done with this game. I think I'm ready to move on to something else. That's not a bad thing.
No.
That's not, because that is like, what, nearly 10 hours worth of... Well, hopefully not 10 hours, maybe like 5 to 6 hours worth of good and entertainment that we had here.
Yeah, one game away for 2 hours.
It's just like, this game actually can be really bad if people are not willing to just make a decision and get on with it. Because like a lot of we played it at 3, but you can play it at 4, even.
Yeah, 4's the max for the base game.
I think that's
game.
It, right? When we play the really big box games and someone takes 5 minutes to make a choice, that's because that choice is vital to whatever happens next.
Yeah, there's future turns to consider as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Do I place a road or do I not place a road this turn? Oh, okay. Maybe at the end stage of the game it could change something slightly. But in the main throw of the game, it's not really going
to
make much
there
of a difference.
There was one moment in our game where I had to make that choice, which is I could have made a double road to stop you from going the way that you were going, Ralph. But I didn't, and that was that. But that choice, literally, I was like, "Well, do I want to go for the longest road, or do I want more resources and set up?" And that was the choice. And I very quickly went, "No, I think I want more resources in the long run," and that ended up being the right choice. But I think a lot of people can be like, "Get." I think if you're not being forceful with some people, they can get hung up on the trading. No one's trading me. I don't have anything. Blah blah blah. And the docks. So on the edge of the game board, on every. On every second straight edge, there are these dock tiles. So they allow you to do either 2-for-1 of a specific resource or three for one of anything if you can get it, right? And those are very important. And I think that's also something that people don't realize in the first couple of playthroughs, which is getting one of these can be the difference between you winning the game and losing the game. Because if you're getting starved for a resource, like for example, I had wheat, which was really good, but Ralph, you were the only one who had sheep.
Mm-hmm. And you guys kept blocking my sheep.
I kept blocking the sheep. Well, that's because I...
And then they're asking questions like, do you have any sheep? No, I don't have any sheep.
That's right. We blocked your sheep. And then both of us like, we need sheep. No, how do we do this?
But like, and so there is these funny moments that happen. But look, I do think it is a game that is still deserving of the title of a gateway game.
It still is. And it's getting a lot of great love around the world still to this day. Actually, about 10 years ago, there was a Guinness World Record of Catan of the most players playing a single game of it. Any of you guys want to take a guess?
Oh, 22,376.
That is so ambitious.
For, wait, all playing the same game or playing a game of it at
the
same time?
Game. I'll show you the board because it's not a conventional looking
board. It is
board.
The same game. Oh, sorry, I thought you were meant like
I'm
going to
say 70.
146.
922 people got together in California, I think.
How did they have to take it in turns?
How the hell
did they had it on a projector screen, the die. So I think it was kind of like a, you know, one of those automated dice. And it was that.
Those big bouncy dice at the SICPO table.
But yeah, so a lot of people still love and play that game. The designer of the game was there as well.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Nearly 1,000 people. That's crazy.
Look, I've also got to say...
Did they still only play to 10 victory points?
No, they actually...
you're asking the questions that we all want to know the answers to, but
that one I don't know, but I think they're still there because they finally settled.
I will say...
Oh, man, he was building up for that for the last half hour.
Yeah, I will say that they are...
If you didn't know, this gentleman has a baby on the way and he's practicing his dad jokes.
Yes, I quite am.
They settled there. Classic.
Yes.
Classic. Anyway, but look, you can't deny its iconicness in the world of board gaming.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, even, like, South Park has taken, like, you know, and used the Settlers of Catan and stuff in one of their episodes. The fact that it's had a name change is now no longer the Settlers of Catan. It's just known as Catan. That's just what it's known. Like, I've got one of the older boxes.
They started paying per character. So
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. You know, boxes are expensive and print ain't cheap, so, you know. Mm.
Remember, it used to be the Settlers of Cher, and now she's just Cher as well. So, you know, it happens a lot.
God, we're going to move on.
You're not the only one who can do dad jokes.
No, I'm impressed. That one got me.
We've
got
to move on to the next topic because we're going to get... Anyway.
No. Well, the next topic can be lent into from this.
Yeah,
I actually want to lean into a little bit of something. So,
please do.
We mentioned Catan Jr., how it's a great take. It's like simplified rule set for kids to enjoy and play. There's a game I love called Scythe, and that is quite a huge game. Essentially, you're just playing to 7 points, but you have to do things in the game. There's a lot of turns. Even just to get 1 point, it might take you like 15 minutes, things like that.
Steampunk robots that go poo-poo in the game.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. But there's Scythe Junior, which is literally you can do one turn and get a point. Like, it really cut down the game for kids fantastically, and it still felt like the same game,
which
is really cool.
Yeah.
They took on the My Little Pony route because it's called My Little Scythe.
They
got the little chibi artwork of like all the main like the main one of the main characters is like a lady who's got like she's a Soviet Union lady, in Siberia, and she's got a bear.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then right. Like one of the little chibis is just this little like cutesy like bear, just sitting there with a cute face, and they've all got like a wolf, I think, is another one.
Yeah. So like normally in the game you do war and you battle someone, but in this one it's a pie fight and you're throwing pies at each other. Like it's a cool little adaptation. Like
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's clever.
There's also like there's all of these big games as well. Generally they all have some variation of Junior. I don't think Carcassonne does.
Yeah, like Bot Factory is the Junior version
of Kanban.
Kanban. Yeah, yeah, Kanban. That's right.
But you've also got like Ticket to Ride Junior, so they've got a version of that as well. There is a lot of different variations where people.
I don't think Carcassonne needs one because you just take out some of the rules.
I think Carcassonne has one though.
It might.
I think I could be wrong.
Hmm. Maybe, yeah.
But when the version that I've played with the kids, I just haven't played with all of the pieces yet. We're just
there's a lot there. Things. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, speaking of, we're going to move on to our discussion topic, kind of transitioning and segueing into it as well. So we kind of spoke about the idea of the completionist, or is more not enough, right? Like this is the idea.
It's just enough, not enough.
It's just enough, not enough.
Too much.
How much girth
does anyone need sheep?
How much girth does this have before it becomes uncomfortable? You know, these kind of things that we need to talk about. But we were talking about it because Catan, being the game that it is, does have expansions. And we started thinking about, well, in the world of board gaming, expansions are not now a unique thing. They're seen everywhere. There's a lot of different things. And we wanted to have a talk about, well, when is it too much? When does it not work? When does it work? And even not just about gaming expansions, but then that kind of transitions into the trends in Kickstarter, which is mo plastic, mo money sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to get your takes on this, guys. Like, what's your view on expansions and big box things?
So just to bounce this Kickstarter idea, like, I love a good Kickstarter game. Like, when I see a new game, I'm like, oh, okay, that 30-second video, that hooked me in. I'll look more and I'll dive in. I'm like, this game looks fantastic. Why are you already advertising expansions for the game that hasn't even come out yet? Like, why do I need this expansion? Like, I'm interested in the game. Why is there 6 expansions for this?
That's one of my pet peeves. I hate that.
I hate
it's
that.
For the people like me who are the guys who are like, oh, for $30 extra I'll get all of that extra okay, that sounds like a good deal. I like receiving boxes in the mail, so I will get an even bigger box just for that extra couple of dollars. I agree with the
sentiment
the sentiment that if you don't even know if the base game works, why would you also
Like, they had the idea to make the first Terminator movie, and they were like, no, let's release 6 at once. Works.
Well, I mean, considering that Terminator 2 is the best movie.
That's right, so the expansion was better than
the expansion actually was better.
Well, like, I want to put out an example of one that I personally didn't really enjoy. So, this is one that I think back on, which was Endless Winter, which Damien backed. And we played at his house, and it had in the box. Now, granted, this thing came with a whole bunch of different modules that you could play. Like, it had like maybe 6 or 7 different extra modules we could have played with. We didn't. We just played the base game. I played it once, and I have no desire to go back and play it again, even with these extra modules. He's already, I think, selling Endless Winter,
Yeah, he's strongly considering it. But I've seen that pop up on the used marketplace already, and for cheaper than what people
so
pay for
much.
It.
Like, they're selling, like, it was like the all-in Kickstarter was like 250 Australian, not even including delivery. Oof. And then I'm already seeing it pop up for like 160, 170 at the moment on the used market. Like, one guy, I think, sold it at 180 brand new and shrink, and I'm like, jeez. I don't know.
That does go to show you the power of good marketing, though.
It does. But that's what I want to talk about, though, is that there are some games that, especially the Kickstarter problem, is that, you know, at least with Kickstarter and stuff, the idea of it is, hey, I've got a game, now you are here to fund my manufacturing cost. At least that's kind of what the board gaming Kickstarter market tends to be. But what it's changed into now is, I've got a game, and I've play tested the rules to like 70%. And I want to do all of this fantastic stuff, but I can't do it unless you give me the money to do that. And then you get running into these problems with, you know, for example, Frosthaven, for example. Whilst Frosthaven is not a bad example, is not a bad game. In fact, it from more accounts, it seems to be a really good game.
It's a fantastic game.
Sorry, Frosthaven is the bad example. I'm thinking of like the amount of stuff that it has, like oh, the amount of plastic that it has.
This is a bad example, me.
Let me go back 20 seconds. We're not going to say Frosthaven. I'm going to say like games like
Zombie Side New York
Heroes of Air, Land, and Sea.
Sure.
Heroes of Air, Land, and Sea. Tainted Grail, for example. These games that provide you models that are fresh out of the mold, not painted.
Yeah.
That's fine. And then you have but they don't add anything to the game. And then you start losing stuff where expansion modules start coming in, which is like, hey, the game is out, and if you want the expansion module, which adds more missions to your story, it's like, is that part of the game or not? Like, are you taking features out of the game to get more money, or am I getting the full experience here? I've seen it happen before where there was a Kickstarter that was 100% backed, but it didn't make
all of its stretch goals.
But then when the thing closed, magically, all the stretch goals, you'll be getting them anyway, right? Because it was like they already had it installed, right? I get that that's marketing,
but it is. Also, it's just to keep you going back to
keep
the
you going back to check it out and get other people to keep backing. I get it, but at some point, I need to know what I'm backing before, like, I actually commit money to this game.
And that's why the late pledges are good. You can put a dollar on there, and then you can pledge later, like if it's something you already interested in.
That is true. Yeah, I guess that is more common these days than it used to be about 18 months ago, where it's like they didn't just have $1 access to
and
the
like typically
manager.
If I'm backing something, I don't care about the stretch goals. Like, I want what I want, and I know the cost already.
I guess
it's you seem to be a bit angry about
it. He does. I think he's been hurt. Someone's hurt him.
But I understand, right? Like the board game community in general is still pretty untainted by big industry, if you like, right? I know there are some big board game manufacturers out there.
Definitely.
But it doesn't feel like there's some big monopoly overlords, you know, saying these are the games you play and here are the 8 pieces of plastic you're allowed to play with. It's still very open.
There's a lot of like big board game developers like Fantasy Flight that make good games. But they are actually
in touch with their communities, right? Unlike a lot of the rest of the world that we live in, where we're reliant on big companies providing half the shit you eat and breathe and sleep in,
and all
that stuff.
I think that's why, Frosthaven and Gloomhaven is different, because it started out with just the one guy, and he had a very small team of people. Like, it was still an individual thing. He only made one other game before he made Gloomhaven, which is insane.
That is crazy, considering the size of Gloomhaven.
Yeah, it's truly impressive
as
to how that happened, and the fact that I think is still one of the most top funded Kickstarters of all time is like just insane.
Top funded board game. Did Root over? No, Root
wasn't near it. There's no like big plastic molds. It's all like cardboard cutout miniatures. There's no like premium experience. There's actually going to be a Kickstarter for that, for those that want it.
To be honest, that's why Frosthaven and Gloomhaven were the wrong example. I just was getting mixed up because they're in my mind.
There's heaps of minis things. Heck, I'm guilty. Like, I backed Black Rose Wars, and that is just a massive thing of plastic miniatures ready for me to airbrush.
One of the things you got is like Eternal Darkness is the same thing, isn't it? That you've got a crap ton. There's like 3 boxes worth of minis.
Massive Darkness.
Sorry, that's
Eternal Darkness is another
is the
big card box game
one. But, by John DeClaire. That's a good one. He does DeClaire.
Massive Darkness was one where, yeah, once again, like, I went in on all of the expansions.
So it's really massive. It's called Massive Darkness because you look into your wallet after you funded it,
it was a black hole. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But there was a stage where I was buying games as well for the miniatures, for the fun of having this stuff, right? It wasn't so much to actually play a good, solid game. It was just, that'll be fun to actually own and maybe one day get out of the
box. I think that's the thing about the stretch goals, and you go back to that website every single day to see what the new stretch goals is, and you're developing that emotional attachment to the game, and you don't care about the money.
The flip side, though,
is the success stories, is the Bristols or the Tortuga games, right? Where these little indie mum and dads have developed a solid base game.
And that's where Kickstarter shines.
That's right. Mm. And there's nothing but the box, right? Like, they don't have stretch goals or anything like that. Actually, I think that's not true. They have a couple of extra
cards
that
little
cards that they throw in, right? You're not, you don't get an extra box or anything. And so those guys are still, you know, are where the board game community really is still shining.
Well, this brings up the interesting question, which is, all right, so we started this talking about expansions, and we haven't talked about expansions at all. We've kind of talked about Kickstarter.
Yeah, we went on that tangent.
But in saying that, because this is a nice, interesting segue, which is, for example, a small box game like you're just saying, which is that I received within the last 12 months, is Long Shot the Dice Game.
Great game.
Which I've played and we all love, right? Yeah. Now, that game is in and of itself a tight standalone package, and all it came with was the couple of the add-ons that it came along with was
just more cards. Yeah.
Yeah, just a few more cards which can change the variability of the play, right? But when I'm talking about expansions, I'm talking about like things, for example, Seafarers of Catan, right? That's your expansion.
Yeah.
Like Seven Wonders have got the Leaders expansion. Seven Wonders Duel has got the Pantheon expansion. Dominion, and it's a million different card boxes that you can get. Like, it's like, you know, you can buy like eight different expansion box.
Wow.
All these kind of different things. I guess the question, I mean, we can keep talking about Kickstarter as well, but, you know, sometimes I think there's something to be said about a nice, clean, tight core gameplay that I think can provide a really good experience. Now, I think the Frosthaven and Gloomhavens are the exception to the rule here, which is mode.
But Gloomhaven is its own game, though, isn't it?
It is. It's its own standalone campaign, right?
So it's not an expansion. It's
No, it's not.
I wouldn't affix bloat or expansion anywhere near Frost or Gloom.
No, I'm
like,
not.
Like, Gloomhaven does have an expansion, which I haven't touched, to be honest. Probably not going to. Because Gloomhaven is already its own game. But think of Gloomhaven as like you have all the pieces that make the map and different characters and monsters.
Mm.
And you just set it up in a unique way according to the scenario and you play it out.
Why I think Gloomhaven specifically is I'm thinking about, well, maybe potentially some maps are not as strong as other maps from a... I don't know, from a gameplay or story point of view. I don't... It's
hard to explain without actually going on a tangent and talking about it for 10, 15 minutes.
Which we'll do on another podcast because we're bringing Damo on because we want to talk about Gloomhaven and Frosthaven in a spoilerific episode. So we're going to do that.
But, like, for example, I brought up Scythe before. Now, Scythe-based game, fantastic game. It has a lot of expansions. Now, Scythe was one of the few games that I brought at home. Played a couple of games with my wife and she's like, this game's great, cool, I'm gonna buy everything I can for it so we can play more of it. And it was great, but there are some expansions that I feel aren't required at all for the game. Like, why does this exist?
They haven't added to it.
That's right. Yeah. It's like, why does it exist at all? Like, one of the expansions is literally like $40 or so, and it gives you like a different type of miniature to move around the map, but it actually doesn't do anything.
Well, I felt that with one of the, like, so Northgard, Uncharted Lands, which is one of the Vikings themed games that I got. Base game is brilliant. We played with the Wilderness module, absolutely did not like it. We were like, yeah, we were excited for more, give us more creatures, more fun things. And it really turned what was this neat, core, tight war game into this...
The only expansion game I think that I've got is Unfair, and that's all. It's just a card expansion, right? Just adds more cards to your deck.
But does it add to the game that those cards are implemented in it?
Look, I mean, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, I couldn't give a full verdict on that, but it just made the decks a bit bigger and you had a little bit more variability in the theme more than anything. But you're right, it didn't... I don't think it adds to the base game.
So have you guys played Terraforming Mars with more than the prelude?
I have, yes. I've played it with the Venus... I've played on one of the different map packs.
Yeah. But do you... Because I believe that adds cards to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did that actually change the gameplay?
No, it didn't change the gameplay. And I think what you're getting here is the point of this discussion, which is... I guess the overall discussion that we're kind of having is, when does bloat/expansion work?
Because there's some games that the expansion is a must-have. Like,
I got one.
Prelude for Terraforming Mars. You just mentioned it.
But in saying that, like, that one, effectively all it does is give you a starting bonus in a randomized thing. So you really don't even need it. You could just go, right, everyone starts with one titanium. You might start with one steel. Kind of balances out. Like,
yeah, what I find Prelude does, though, Prelude just actually focuses in, because it says, you now get this company, and this company, it gives you a couple of other things, and it says, okay, you actually now get starting bonuses. So now it actually focuses you in, because when you start normal Terraforming Mars, you're like, well, I can do fucking...
Like, I can't knock it, because it is really cheap as well. Like, yeah, you may as well add that
it's
on.
It's $20.
Yeah.
Anyway, you said you had a good one, Matt. Please, now, do share with the class.
But it's your one.
Which one?
The TI.
Prophecy of Kings.
So is that a... See, I really like Prophecy of Kings, but I can see why a lot of people who like TI actually don't like POK, because it...
You have to play with it the game or not at all. Lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, I don't like the whole agents, leaders, commanders, hero.
Yeah.
Those extra abilities, I feel like they just add time to the game. But ooh, I love the exploring factor.
See, I really like the expansion for everything that it adds, because I love TI, so more game was more TI. I do see what you're saying about the agent, commander, heroes. However, I think that gets solved when you play it more often, when you're like,
I enjoy them. It's not like it's breaking my brain. It's just I feel like it wasn't required.
I get
you're
that
right,
as well.
Right. I don't think it's required in the game.
Mm.
The base game the base game is still solid by itself, but I think the expansion doesn't it's not a bloat expansion. No. Right? You're actually getting bang for your buck with that expansion.
Yeah, that was...
And it does change the gameplay for the better if you're that kind of player.
That expansion was more money than some of the games that I've actually standalone games. It was 150 bucks standalone, but it changed the game completely.
It's us, yeah. It's a really good one.
So I think that on reflection, it's more miss than hit with expansions.
Yeah, so
yeah, I think it can be from time to time.
So what I don't get, Spirit Island is a game I really enjoy. However, it's only playable if you get the first expansion for it, which is only an extra $40. But it's like, why aren't, like, in essence, it didn't add a lot of things. It added a lot of cards and it added some more tokens. But you could have easily found spot for that in the base game. Mm. Like, why did the publisher break it up? Like, I don't understand. If everyone's like saying you have to play it, and you really do need to play with the first expansion, so that just boggles my mind that a publisher actually did that.
Or sometimes,
but did they do that on like?
They must have done it to save cost.
Save cost on the initial print run. I mean, look, it still worked. I mean, they came out, but there are like sometimes where I think publishers can go too far. I mean, one of the examples for me is Seven Wonders Duel. Seven Wonders Duel was a great tight knit game. Then the Pantheon expansion came down and add the gods in. And I think it, you know, it really makes the game great. But then they have a third expansion called the Agora expansion. And that one I've played and I'm like, it's too much now.
I'm saying that I loved the first expansion of Seven Wonders Duel. But I wasn't rushing out to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same thing. Yeah. Mm. Which is, there are some games that are so good at their base form that you're just like, even if the game is great with the expansion, you're like,
It's like, I wouldn't feel like it's missing. If I play base game Seven Wonders Duel, I wouldn't feel like I'm missing something.
No, I agree. There is like, there are good examples. Another good example, which I really love as an expansion, is the Lords of Vegas Underworld expansion.
That's not where you can stack the tiles on
top?
No,
that's the Up expansion. So it just came out with two expansions. The first one is the Up expansion, which, I'm going to be honest, I don't actually really like the Up expansion, which is like, hey, you can make your casinos up.
If you have spare money, like, why not? But
look, it changes the game, because the game became this... When you started building the casinos up, you had made it harder for you to like actually merge casinos together. Whereas part of the fun was actually going, you know what? I'm just going to risk it that my one dice gets a six over your five dice. And it's happened so many times where someone just rolls a dice 5-1 and I'm now
the corporate takeover mechanism is a lot of fun in that game.
But then the Underworld expansion came along and said, okay, you know what? That's all really great, but we're not going to change that core gameplay. We're just going to give you some little powers here and there. And those little, like, it's like little spice, little like, okay, you know, you actually get to steal like maybe a parking lot from someone, or you can, you know, force someone to gamble at your casino.
Your casino. That's cool.
Little things like that I find that games that give you, it's either more of the same, or if you're going to give me it like, I just said it, but to add a spice, right? Well, I don't need, if I'm having spaghetti bolognese, I want my garlic bread on the side. I don't want to have
don't blend up the garlic blend into the sauce.
Exactly right. Yeah. Just give it to me and let me choose, right? Maybe
puree the garlic bread for me, please.
Sticking with that analogy,
I was going to say someone gets beef stroganoff and just dumps it on on my spaghetti, but that works too.
Because like, there seems to be a couple of different threads here, right? Like, there are games where the base game is fine by itself and shouldn't be touched, right? It doesn't need anything else.
Yeah.
Adding the extra spice, as you say, is fine, but you don't need it, right? Mm. So
I'm saying that, like, I bought Flemridge the other week. I need that Petalion expansion.
Peloton?
Because after I played it twice, I was like, man, this is missing something.
Yeah.
The Peloton expansion is good.
Well, then there's the next thread, right, of games that are okay,
yeah,
but are enhanced by their expansion. That's so, and then there are the ones that are ruined by their expansion, where you're like, it took the fun out of both games,
yeah, and
essentially.
When I found that happened, I just removed the expansion or chose not to play with that piece. Mm. Like with Scythe, I was insistent that we still play with the airships because I'm like, no, I paid for these things, we're going to play with these things. But
I mean, I suppose then in that regard, it is like movies, right?
Yeah.
In your sequels and your trilogies, in that sometimes it's the next movie makes the first one even better or builds on the story in a really good way. Sometimes you're like, okay, well, we sat through that, so let's never go back to that again.
Yeah. Like, Back to the Future doesn't have, like, a weak link at all.
I think it did originally. I think the love for Back to the Future 2 has grown over the years.
Back to the Future 2 has always and will always be my favorite Back to the Future.
See, but I think that's it, right? Like, it was almost a cult favorite in the trilogy. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everyone loves 1 and 3, but 2 is the black sheep.
I was only just chatting the other day about the new Star Wars trilogy, going, now that there's 3 Star Wars trilogies, the trilogies have a bad trilogy in them, right? Like, there's now the original great, the prequels now look pretty good by comparison, and the latest ones you're like,
oh, the cinematography was the best thing. That was it.
I haven't gone back and
sound
watched
design. Sound design of the sequels is the best sound design.
You must have muted the TV.
No, I didn't say
sound. I didn't say script.
That's exactly right. I said sound design, not script. Even though, let's be honest.
Somehow Palpatine came back. Okay, you gotta explore that? Nope, moving on.
All right. And he just has this army with him. Sorry, I hope you guys have all seen it.
Let's put the horses on the spaceship. What the hell is this?
What, there's
this
horses? Avatar? I don't think I've seen that.
In the end of the third episode.
Oh, is there?
Episode 9.
In episode 9, where they're riding the space horses on the spaceship.
I don't think I remember that. I remember the kiss, and that was, I was out.
Okay,
after
here's a question. All right. Where is the gaming equivalent to the space horse? Go. Tell me, where is the expansion that came out? They went, what the hell is this? This doesn't match anything that I know. I'll let you dwell on that one.
That's a good question. That is a good question.
When Croconole went pay to win. Oh, God. All right, to close out this discussion, I think what we're kind of saying here, which is that, you know, keep an eye out because there are, you know, and actually
don't get suckered into the marketing.
But look, if you already like a movie, you're most likely going to like the expansion. So I would encourage people just to at least check it out to see if it's something you like.
Don't buy tickets to all 3.
No, don't do that.
The first one.
Unless you're someone crazy like me, don't do that.
We're not doing a Lord of the Rings director's cut marathon unless you are sure that you like all 3 of them.
See, no one's told me that, and I did do that.
I've never actually watched the director's cut of any of them, so maybe I should.
Yeah, I'm convinced it's just directors.
Right,
they don't cut anything.
I'm not going to start right now because it's 10 p.m., so I won't be finished until midday tomorrow if I start now.
If you're lucky.
If I'm lucky. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, Matt, thank you for bringing the chaos back into the podcast. Yeah. It's been lovely to have you here. Ralph, thank you as always for joining
great
us.
Great fun. Thank you for having me.
This has actually been a really fun one. A lot of chaos and a lot of shouting at each other. Good to see we're back on form. If you guys enjoyed what you were listening to, please go and check out our website, www.boardgamegateway.com. We've just released what I'm calling version 1.5 of our website. So same visual aesthetic, but now we actually have some working back-end features such as podcast filtering. We have new articles going up. Speaking of new articles, Ralph just released his latest article, The Journey, The Destination, The Campaign, talking about his love for campaign games.
That's right. It's mostly about Scythe and Gloomhaven.
Yeah, so
there you go.
It's really good.
Perfect segue.
It's a really good look. As the editor-in-chief of the website, I had to read it a few times, and actually it's really good.
Yeah, thank you for correcting all my spelling mistakes.
Thank you, ChatGPT, for spelling for doing that for me.
It can do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Just paste anything in there.
It can do a lot of things.
It'll do a lot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And look, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, we do also have a YouTube channel as well. So the Board Game Gateway over there. We have all the video podcasts. We have Let's Plays. We've got a few more things designed. We're actually going to be doing a series where we're going to take you through our collections. I'm going to talk about them. If you've seen Shut Up and Sit Down Do It, a la them, we're going to do something very similar. So keep an eye out for that. We'd love to see you over there. And also go check out our Facebook page, because that's where we post all of our content as well, and discussions with our community. So until next time, guys, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on this podcast. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Farewell.